Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
This is from the newyorktimes.com. What the government schools is in quotation here. We say government schools on the air often here on Free Talk Live because we consider it to be an accurate statement, right?
They use the term government schools?
Yes. What the government schools critics really mean.
Well, the reason that we use the term government schools is because it's more accurate. It is a better way to discern, normally people will say public school. It's a better way to discern who's really in charge of this, because the word public is kind of a distraction. It makes you think like, oh, yes, we're all in charge of the public. It's their schools. We are the ones who run the schools. When that's total BS, it's them, the government, the people calling themselves the state of fill in the blank, the city of, you know, the federal government. These are the people.
The school board.
The school board. These are the people who are running the government schools. So let's call it like it is. They are government schools, because you could still have the other term is private school or homeschooling. But looking at private schooling, that kind of sounds like, oh, well, this is exclusive. Only a certain group is allowed. But the reality is private schools can be open to members of the public, meaning anybody who comes in there, they won't discriminate against them so long as they're willing to pay the bills to go to the school or they get a scholarship. So it's not like it's impossible for somebody to go to most private schools unless the school has specific rules saying, well, you have to be a Christian or whatever in order to go here.
It's a never-ending black hole of money is what these schools are. They yap and yap about improvements and we need this and we need that and nothing ever happens.
No, and you can't really change it, you know, from the inside. Right. It's so unwieldy, so humongous to try to get in as a school board member and make an impact. It's impossible.
And meanwhile, you see programs in these same areas, you know, where you have these supposed budgetary crises, and you see schools that crop up around the areas where they'll be trying to run the school on some sort of like shoestring budget, right? For the less fortunate. You know, they'll try to do a school for the poor or whatnot, and they will outperform the other schools in the area dramatically. This doesn't often happen. See, if this were to happen more often in, you know, the sort of the rich white areas, I guess you'd probably see more change in schools when they realized, oh, hey, this happened. You know, this is this type of thing happens. They're able to make these schools perform better on such a limited budget. But that type of thing doesn't really happen in the areas where it's like, you know, upper middle class.
I'm 60 years old, okay? And I grew up on a military basis all my life until I was 16, okay?
Okay.
And then when Dad retired from California and we finally moved back to Georgia where we were from, when I came back here as a sophomore, I had already learned everything that they were trying to teach me by the seventh grade.
Yeah, they
and
say
so
that
my last 2 years school, I just kind of goofed off and floated through them.
They say that about Southern schools. I graduated from a Southern school.
No, it was all schools. It was all schools.
Okay.
Okay. But on a military base, I knew how to use a slide rule and do log books when I was in the seventh grade, okay? And everybody else did, too. But our school system in general, and if you look back through history, the kids, if you had a sixth-grade education in the 1850s, you already knew how much corn was in a bushel, you knew the increments. You knew everything. Yeah. You knew everything. But nowadays, I mean, I go to the store nowadays and kids can't even write their name on a check in cursive.
God help them if the machine doesn't tell them what change to give back.
I'd rather talk about something else. Talk about Blockbuster Video. You guys were talking about that yesterday and it touched my heart.
We were talking about the last 10 physical Blockbuster Video locations that exist. They're still open in the United States. Most of them, six, I think, of the 10 or so, are in Alaska. Three of them, I believe, were in Oregon, and one in Texas. Fascinating stuff.
Yeah, now I've actually been to the one in Texas.
Really?
Just as a coincidence. Yeah, it's near McAllen, Texas.
When? How long ago?
This was years ago. It was before it was the last one in Texas.
I see. Okay.
So long. Video. Yeah. But it'd be super interesting, I think, to go back and check it out.
He, that's Donald Trump, promised to take a sledgehammer to what he is calling failing government schools.
Wait. Before this, they mentioned a $9 billion cut. And I think that something that we didn't mention, and I don't know, but normally when the government talks about cuts, they're usually talking about cutting the proposed increase. Do we know whether this particular cut is the typical cut of cutting a proposed increase in the budget, or are they actually talking about taking out $9 billion from last year's budget? Because it's almost never that.
I wouldn't be surprised if that's what they're talking about, because charter schools and voucher systems rarely give the amount that that government schools get per student, if that makes sense. So let's, here in New England, it is not unusual for a government school to be about $15,000 per student. I know people are aghast around the nation, but that's true here in New England.
I think it's like 20 here.
Whereas if you were to send your kid to a charter school, that charter school's maybe $5,000 going to follow that kid. That's $10,000 that is saved. Mm-hmm. By sending the kid to the government school, to the taxpayer. Now, okay. Of course, the government school proponents are like, look, that's $10,000 worth of education destroyed. Well, it's not. If you would have to prove first that money is correlative to education, and
they've yet to do that.
Right. We've got decades worth of the United States proving that's not true.
I thought for quite a while that public schools were just a means to brainwash children into believing in the state. People say I'm an extremist when I say that, but it really is the truth. You know, at my commencement for my last year, we had to stand and say the pledge. They were talking about how great America is, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I wonder why nobody questions it. As said, I think it might just be like, you know, kind of like a church brainwashing religious children in a way.
In many ways, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
But what I was actually calling in about was parenting. Do you think... aside from cases of abuse, do you think there really is such thing as a bad parent? And do you find that to be an objective term or a very subjective term?
So first off, I think that it's very, very easy for people to come up with their opinions as to why somebody is a good parent or a bad, usually just a bad parent, because everybody does things differently. And
usually everybody thinks their way is the right way.
Right. Well, at the very least, I don't think my right way is necessarily the wrong way, because you can't parent the way another person would parent.
It's good that you brought up neglect, because I have some very strong opinions on this. But do you think besides from neglect, you know, carelessness is a bit like it? Like a close family friend of mine has a daughter who is 18 years old, and she ended up getting pregnant.
Oh, no.
And I think, you know, that's a little young to get pregnant until you realize that this girl was sneaking out of the house every single night mm-hmm. and, you know, having sex with somebody without her mom knowing. And do you think that that's partially the mother's fault? Because I personally think it is.
That
you
she got
stop
pregnant?
Your kid. No, that she was sneaking out of the house and having sexual activities with other people.
Was this at 18 or 17?
This was at 17 years old.
Keep
in mind, this guy was 32 years old.
I hear you. The problems with the mother's parenting occurred before this happened.
Sure.
Whatever, this is a symptom of the problem.
She doesn't
want
to communicate with her mother about what she wants to do, which is to go have sex with somebody in the middle of the night or go party or whatever it is that leads to those things.
This had been going on for years. She just got pregnant at age 17, however.
Sure,
apparently,
sure.
She had been doing this since she was 13 years old.
I believe that.
I find to be
sneaking out middle of the night, climbing out the window, that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, that could also bring in, like, you know, things like consent. But you think that maybe some parents don't talk to their kids about stuff like this enough.
I don't think that you can learn how to do any sex very effectively from watching pornography. I think that,
well, you know what part to put where.
Yeah, that's true.
But you learn that at a farm, too. I, you know, I don't go for watching. Yeah, I don't go for that. You know, you can ladening the kid with guilt, that works to some extent. Now, what's it do to them
get them
later?
To stop having not have sex? You mean like you're going to burn in hell? That kind of ladening with guilt?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, they've got these.
You think that works?
What's that?
You think that works?
It prevents some kids from having
sex. Why is it frequently that the, you know, like the pastor's daughter, the preacher's kids are always the ones that are the
always
most sexually active?
Yeah,
almost 100% of the time.
All I'm saying is that some of these kids take these abstinence vows, and some of these kids keep these abstinence vows. I know somebody. I've met someone.
Not the preacher's kids
that kept it until 29.
Like, was it the preacher's kid?
Look, I don't know anything about preacher's
kids. I'm telling you, Johnson's that are making their own choices versus ones that were, you know.
Okay, so preacher's kids that you know is a relatively small segment of
the population.
It's
not even the ones I know. When I went to Christian camp as a teenager, that was what everybody talked about, was that whoever was there as the preacher's
kid. Now you're in the realm of gossip amongst 11-year-olds at a summer camp.
Do you believe in, like, the scare tactics that a lot of churches use, for example? Like, you know, like, you'll go blind. Do you think that's a deterrent?
I don't think they need
to.
They can
say
you'll get pregnant and be poor for the rest of your life and be telling the truth.
Do they still try the blind thing? Is that really?
No, I don't think so.
I mean, I heard that at a Catholic school that I went to when I was like 11 years old. Well, not a Catholic school. It was vacation Bible school at a Catholic church. And they had openly said, you'll go blind if you like kiss somebody in the parking lot or something.
Oh,
like
I thought that was only for self-pleasuring is when you go blind. So now
that's
they're
what
saying,
it was for.
Right. Okay. So now they're saying even just kissing or maybe hugging, front hugging. Will that also make you go blind? Because I know some of the Christians are against that.
Front hugging. Yeah. You got to do the Christian side hug.
Right.
What is front? Oh, like full on front hugging somebody?
Yes.
How is that even remotely sexual?
You should ask some of these Christian people because they have the Christian side hug. Now, whether that's real
or
not, I don't
Stefan,
know.
Come on, Stefan.
To make a cross?
Have you never hugged a woman and thought to yourself, I'm feeling her boobs against my chest? Have you never?
I will neither confirm nor deny.
Right. I mean, absolutely. The libertarian tradition is indebted, above all, to the Chicago economist Milton Friedman, who published a hugely influential 1955 paper, The Role of Government in Education. A true believer in the power of free markets to solve all humanity's problems, Friedman argued that government schools are intrinsically inefficient and unjustified. Mm. He proposed that taxpayers should give money to parents and allow them to choose where to spend education dollars in a marketplace of freely competing private providers.
Well, that's not really a libertarian position. That's sort of a stopgap measure at best. The true libertarian position is that parents should never be taxed in the first place, and nor should anyone else, because if that is actually what Friedman proposed, and I don't doubt that it was.
You know, I know it is. If you take Milton and Rose Friedman Foundation, that's what they say. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's just a school choice thing, and that's still a tax-based system. It's still transferring wealth from those who do not have kids to those who do have kids, and it's not fair. It shouldn't exist. If I want to support a school as somebody who doesn't have kids, I should be able to make that choice. But if for whatever reason I don't want to, I should make that choice too. And then that proposal doesn't allow for that.
Dabney railed against the new public schools in the 1870s. He invaded
against.
Just
to be clear, this is a Presbyterian railing. They're saying the author of this New York Times article is saying a Presbyterian preacher railed against the public schools. Those public schools were created by Protestants?
Well, Ian, the history of government schools in this country, is sort of a long and halting one. And different communities brought them about for different reasons. Mm-hmm. And, there were fewer government schools in the South before the Civil War than there were after. Reconstruction brought what was a more northern tradition down to the South, if that makes sense to you. So anyway, he inveighed against the unrighteousness of taxing his oppressed white brethren to provide pretend education to the brats of black paupers. For Dabney, the root of the evil in the Yankee theory of popular state education was democratic government itself, which inferred with the liberty of,
I'm lost.
Excuse
what
me,
was this
interfered
being said
with the liberty of a slave of the slaver South.
What was being said there? So this guy is mad. This preacher from back in the day,
yep.
was mad because black people were getting an education?
Basically, he was mad because the taxation was going on. Whites were being taxed to give education to blacks.
I see. You probably know better than I, but how could you make a free energy device out of plastic printed parts?
Oh, that's just the molding that I'm going to basically... I'm working on an electromagnet, sort of specialized type of electromagnet. And so this is just sort of the mold that I'm going to wrap the wire around. A lot easier than building it by hand.
Neat.
Well, let us know how it goes.
Yeah, I'm ready for free energy. I want that now.
Yeah, I'm ready too.
I want that yesterday.
All right, so my initial point was that everybody who argues against, you know, those of us who don't like the government, they always use the argument about who will build the roads and who will maintain the roads. Well, the question has finally been answered. There's a neighborhood that was run by an HOA in San Francisco, and this is actually Nancy Pelosi's and Barbara Feinstein's neighborhood, or Dianne Feinstein, mind my bad. So Dianne Feinstein and Pelosi's neighborhood was run by an HOA, and the city's been, you know, maintaining the roads, and the HOA was supposed to pay the city to you know, maintain these roads. Well, they haven't paid those fines in like 11 years. And so the city auctioned off the neighborhood streets. And one of the residents of the neighborhood bought the streets, and they're going to recover their, they're thinking about recovering their investment by selling parking spaces on the streets.
There you go. People can can drive around or whatever. I'd put up a toll only for Feinstein and Pelosi.
Hey, Daily Digest listeners. If you're like me, then you really enjoy Free Talk Live and the message of liberty. Yet you may not always have the time to listen to an episode of Free Talk Live, so you listen to the Digest instead. If you enjoy the Digest, please donate $5 to $10 per month to patreon.com/crblake86. That's patreon.com/crblake86. You can also donate with Bitcoin or Ether. See the show notes for further details.
You don't know the difference between crap and ice cream when it comes to Filipinos. Keep that
cake
hole
of
yours shut.
For sure.
I don't know why you do that. Somebody.
Because that's what I've heard.
Sure. Well, somebody told you. Somebody from Guam told you that they, heard something.
I know, because the entire time, every time I think of Ralph, I know it's bothered me because I've tried to establish a picture of him in my head, right? Just based on that wacky accent of his, right? But ever since you told me it was white with that accent, I've been picturing him as actor Jared Harris. He's sort of he's been on the show The Expanse. He was on King George the Sixth on The Crown, the show The Crown. He's kind of this famous British actor, actually, but he's got this real high voice. He was Lance Price on Mad Men. He's been in some various favorite things. He was on Fringe. Anyway, I've always pictured Ralph as looking kind of like this guy because he has kind of a similar voice, not the same accent at all, but a similar voice to Ralph. I just want to know, what does Ralph look like?
I was reading the explanation from one man, Wayne Spillett, who appears to have lived in the Philippines, and he says that apparently Oriental Asians, favor lighter skin amongst their own kind. So unlike...
Isn't Oriental a racially insensitive term, too?
You could say. Some people have said that. Yeah, I don't know if it is or not. But anyway, he says that, so unlike, let's say, American white people who are constantly trying to tan themselves, he says that Asians use parasols and other tools to shade themselves, and there's a huge market for cosmetic whitening products. Furthermore, he says dark skin is often associated with people who work outside, which implies a menial job, something else which, if you'll pardon the pun, colors their views on skin color. A Filipino or other Asian may express a wish not to marry a black person, but that doesn't necessarily relate to racism in the sense that we know racism in Europe or America. It's more like a preference for eye or hair color. Generally speaking, in Asia, blacks are not treated differently to other foreigners, though if you look at things through a West-tinted lens, you might not realize this. So that explains, you know, if somebody is a Westerner going into the Philippines and they see this obsession with being lighter skinned, and that, you know, that translates into not wanting to marry or date darker people, one could understand why one might extrapolate from that these people are racist.
I've got two little boys, right? One's four, one's two.
Congratulations.
And thank you. The older one, he's got a tablet. The younger one has a tablet too, but he's sort of kind of like, you know, just, you know, watches one thing that he knows is there. Mm-hmm. But the old one's on YouTube. And what I've noticed is it's just like, he just gets bombarded with statism, right? So he's into the Paw Patrol, and I'm constantly having to say, yeah, the firefighter dog, good dog, right? EMS dog, good dog. Oh, the cop dog, no, bad dog. Stay away from that dog, right? And you know, now we're, you know, he's getting older. He, you know, maybe wants to play football, and they're, you know, saying pledges to, like, you know, false idols and, you know, craziness like that. Some people call it flags. And I'm just wondering, as a parent, like, what, if anything, do you do to, like, sort of kind of protect your kid from the brainwashing power of the state?
Sometimes I talk about news stories. I mean, I'll get whipped up about a news story at home or whatever. And, you know, at that point, you can obviously see an anti-statist bend in me. What I try to do is have sort of realistic conversations with him about what's right and what's wrong and what going on here is right and wrong. I guess I just have heart to hearts with him now and then. I don't want my son to be, on the outs with other kids because he's taking some principled stand on the flag that he doesn't feel. I mean, if he comes to some conclusion later on about the flag, then that's, you know, his business. But I'm not going
to.
I mean, my son doesn't even know the Pledge of Allegiance because, I frankly
didn't go to government school.
Yeah, he didn't go to government school. I haven't taught it to him, and
that's got to be the number one thing to, you know, unindoctrinate or prevent your kids from being indoctrinated in the first place, is just not let them go to government school ever. We're doing this show from New Hampshire, in Keene, New Hampshire, which is probably one of the whitest places in the world. And, you know, that's in my opinion, one of the downsides about New Hampshire is there's not much diversity up here, but it is what it is. And I'm against the government schools here. But there aren't really any black people in the government schools here. I mean, there was apparently one black kid in the government schools, you know, generally per every few years or whatever here. I mean, it's not very many, maybe one to two maximum per grade level or whatever. And yeah. So if I'm against government schools and every kid in the government school is a white kid, does that mean that I'm a racist?
Well, yes, it says here in the New York Times.
Yeah, sorry.
This is the acceptable modern progressive opinion. And if you don't like it, you can't be modern or progressive. Sorry. There was some video called I can't remember what it was, but there were these Christian day camps that were basically saying prayers to George W. Bush cardboard
Jesus camp.
Cardboard cutouts.
That movie.
It was a great film.
Yeah, and that was very interesting. I didn't have that exact same experience, but I wasn't questioning patriotism these days, and I question now just how patriotism, not whether it should exist, but basically what it should be. I think it is more patriotic to ask questions and question your government, and that the founding fathers would have found a pledge to be abhorrent and, frankly, all kinds of genuflections surrounding the playing of the national anthem and all this stuff. I gave some proof on a previous show just a few nights ago, is that when I was a kid, you didn't have to put your hand over your heart when the national anthem played. But now it's put into the U.S. code that is a way to do it. It's a relatively new phenomenon. If you go look it up, it's like, 2003 or something. And now you put your hand over your heart. Well, this is just because...
And you take your hat off, right?
Well, you always took your hat off.
Right.
But this is just because somebody didn't know what the hell they were doing, and they put their hand over their heart during the national anthem instead of the pledge, and then everybody else is like looking at them, you know, oh my God, that Starbelly Sneech has his hand over his heart. I better do it too, because he can't be more patriotic than me.
And patriotic measuring contest.
Right. Yeah. And what I suggested is if I stood on one leg to honor the people, the amputees from the Iraq War, would people start standing on one leg too? I really, really, really believe that government schools are essentially middle class welfare, babysitting day prisons. And by what that I mean is that it's middle class welfare, not
lower class welfare, because middle class, so the majority of people are sending their kids to government school. Babysitting, because that's what their job is, to send kids around, make ring bells, and make them do certain things at certain times. And they might learn, I'll be generous, an hour and a half a day. The rest of the time is just busy work. Day prisons, they can't leave. They have no authority to decide when they're going to go outside, when they're going to use the bathroom, when they're going to do those things. I'm not looking for that for my kid. I want him to have autonomy to understand his responsibility for his own self-education. And those are things that I talk to him about on a regular basis.
What's the age gap between you and your wife?
She is 2 years and 10 months older than I am.
Okay.
And what was the age gap between you and your former girlfriend?
17 years?
note it's former.
Well, let's see what this article has to say.
I dated a girl that was a young lady who was more than 10 years younger than me at one point. And I must say,
that girl.
Yeah, she and I did not communicate as well as we could. Like, there was some intuitive communication that did not occur. Mm. And I would have to explain myself more thoroughly than I would normally, I think. Go ahead.
Well, this is from the psychology blog. Many people are attracted to a younger partner, but is it worth it in the long run?
They make for better pictures on the internet.
The best age gap for marital satisfaction is none at all, research finds.
Okay.
In the long run, couples who are mismatched in age tend to be less satisfied, even if they are better off at first, according to the research. Both men and women are initially particularly satisfied when they get a younger husband or wife. That is, the older one is particularly more satisfied.
I can see how that initial satisfaction might work.
Right. Professor Tara McKinnish, who co-authored the study, said, "We find that men who are married to younger wives are the most satisfied, and men who are married to older wives are the least satisfied."
Didn't you do that with your wife, where you don't feel like you can responsibly handle money, so you've given it all to her?
I would say that she doesn't feel like I can responsibly handle money, too. That we have come to a marital agreement that in fact, it is better if I acquire money and do not spend it, and that she puts her stamp of approval on all spending.
Doesn't that put you in the position of the younger, irresponsible person?
I would say that there's...
You don't have to think about money. You go to her to beg for $20 to go to McDonald's.
It's true, I do. But she's in the position of having to... All the money she gets from me.
Uh-huh.
So that's it's not an irresponsible position. It's a...
Well, you also had the agreement initially, though, that she was going to do all the child rearing, correct? And that's arrangement changed, seems to have changed somewhat.
What do you mean? I do the child rearing. I mean, she does child rearing.
Yeah, no, child rearing.
I do as much as I want.
You take care of Jack a lot. Okay.
Just as much as I
want.
So
it's totally voluntary, essentially, is what you're saying. So
and he's much more interesting now that he's not a little potted plant.
Potted plant?
You know?
What?
I mean, you know, they get older, they get more interesting.
Right.
And, you know, now he can talk and ask questions that I want to answer.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.